Hey guys, how's it going? My name is Joseph Fordham and this is NPLH In Conversation With, the football podcast that isn't about football, brought to you by NPLH Studio. NPLH is more than a podcast. Once you've hit the follow button, visit nplhmag.com to enjoy online reads, subscribe to our newsletter and browse our collection of magazines, prints and apparel. On to the show. This week I'm joined by This Fangirl founder Amy Drucker and occasionally a coffee machine. Amy charts her journey from childhood match days with her dad and the sense of belonging that came with those, to the wilderness years of early adulthood when football stadiums no longer felt like home. Knowing this wasn't a feeling unique to her, and with a creative itch to scratch, Amy began an ambitious photographic project across the country to readdress media representation of female fans. Along the way, she not only reclaimed her place in the game, but through This Fangirl, forged a community for women in search of one in the process. But it doesn't end there, and we've got Leicester City winning the Premier League to thank. Over to Amy. How you doing, Amy?
Hello. Yeah, good, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, good. I can already see a hint of an impressive collection of jerseys behind you there.
This is my little baby collection here. There are some others littered around my house.
Oh, yeah?
Weird hoarder.
It's a great backdrop. More impressive than mine, which is, I don't know if you can see it, it's the Wizard of Oz. Completely irrelevant.
Oh, I'm into it.
To a football podcast. Well, not so irrelevant. It's the inspiration behind the name of the magazine.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah. How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. Yeah, I'm fine.
What's that jersey you got on there?
This one is a Art of Football one.
Oh, nice.
So it's their new one. Art of Football are just up the road from us, so they operate out of Notts. So very, very supportive of everything that Art of Football do. They do some wicked stuff. But yeah, just thought I'd
it's a good one.
Rep visually today.
Great contact to have around the corner to flesh out that collection behind you.
100%. I'm always on to them being like, anything you fancy sending me today?
Got a shoot. A meeting. What you got?
Yeah, exactly. Kick me up.
Oh, thanks for getting in touch about this and for sparing the time to chat.
It's so, like, I've been following you guys for a while and, like, your podcasts are wicked.
Oh,
I feel like you really get into it.
Nice.
You know, and you've got some really good names on, and I was just like, I want to go. I was saying to Amy, I was like, I want to go on this podcast. No, but you've had some amazing names on it and, like, proper, cool, like, genuinely interesting people in the scene and people that, like, I look up to as well, so that's super cool.
Nice one. I appreciate you saying that. I've definitely done a lot of work on my ego over the past few years, but it's not against the odd little pat on the back with a comment like that, so I really appreciate it.
Oh, good. No, seriously, it is, and it's like visually they look really good, and they look it comes from like a area of football that, like, you and I probably, like, operate in quite a lot, so it's nice to hear from all these people that are doing different things with potentially some overlap.
Right, so This Fangirl, let's get onto that. There's a lot to get into. Maybe what I'm curious about is I'm gathering without asking that you've grown up watching football.
That was a big part of my life when I was younger. I started going to football with my dad when I was like 9 years old. I feel like my story is just reflected in so many people's and so many women's specifically. So I've got two sisters, grew up with my mum and my dad. And my dad was always a massive football fan, didn't actually support Leicester growing up. He's from Yorkshire, so he grew up in Halifax, Huddersfield, so that was his team. And then when he moved to Leicester, he was just like, we're not going to go to Huddersfield every other weekend, are we, as a family, to watch the football. So let me not change allegiances, but I think he started like going to football with his friends, and then he did the switch. And then he was just like, look, this is a way that I can like connect with my family and my girls. We'll be like we'll support this team going forward. So we used to like share season tickets. My dad would always have his, and then the second one would be like part my mum's, part my big sister's, part mine, part my little sister's. So we'd do like the share on it. So yeah, I started going when I was like 9, 10. I just thought it was the most exciting thing in the entire world. I always thought like him saying that I could go to the football meant that I was a grown up. So I was just like, because he's not going to take me if I'm like too little. So I always took it as like a massive compliment. as well. I got to go and just experience this mad world of just so much excitement. And so I loved it. Absolutely loved going to football with my dad when I was little.
That's really important as a kid, isn't it? When you feel like you've entered the grown-up realm.
Big time, yeah. And it's just like, I think it sort of entered you into a slightly different world. Like, I remember saying, like, football was the first time I could, like, swear, because, like, everyone else was swearing. So I was kind of allowed to swear, and my dad wouldn't tell me off. And you hear all this other stuff, and you're like, I get it. Like, I understand what this means. And I used to always just go to school and basically just, like, parrot what my dad had told me at the football, like, back to the boys, and be like, I don't know. I remember, like, seeing, I don't know, there was this, like, free kick or something, and I'd be like, yeah, it was really dangerous. Like, my dad just literally just explaining what my dad had said. And the boys were just like, anyway, so yeah, it was just that was something that we all did when we were growing up. I think probably not as much as like loads of other people, but was definitely a part of my childhood. I think I, again, like really similarly to a lot of women, I stopped going as much when I sort of got into college and when I had my first job. And then from then, so sort of like fell out with it for quite a long time. Just was so, there were so many sort of times when I thought, oh, you know what, football's not really for me. Like, it was kind of fine when I was a kid, because I'd go with my dad, but like as an adult, football's probably not for an adult woman. And I just had so many different sort of times that that had been shown to me, and I was like, this is just not really my thing.
What do you mean by shown to you, in kind of like the behaviors of men at the games?
Yeah, I think it was definitely felt like that. It just felt like it was just not somewhere that I could fully be. I couldn't be 100% myself. I definitely couldn't like go to a game by myself. That would have been genuinely, like, back then it would have been too dangerous. I didn't feel like I could ever talk about football to people, because they, as soon as I did, they'd be like, what are you on about? Like, you're not a real fan. That happened for a really, really long time. And I think I've got like a couple of different memories of just being like, yeah, this is not really for a place for women, really. I think the first one was, I lived in Manchester in like for uni and things like that. And me and my friend, like, one day we went to the cinema, and it was the exact day that, like, I think it was Rangers were in town for like a, I don't know, it was something on, it was like some UEFA fixture. We were walking, we were like, it was all kicking off. Someone like threw this bottle and it hit my foot, and it like, it didn't, you know, it wasn't like I had to go to A&E or anything, but like it like kind of split my foot a bit. And I was just like, oh, this is just grim. Another reminder that this world doesn't really fully belong to me. And then I had another one. I won't say the club just because I just don't, you know, I'll just do that for privacy. But when I was in the north,
it's West Ham. I'm glad it's not West Ham.
It wasn't West Ham. No, don't worry. No, you're cool. Although I have, unfortunately, I've got another tale about West Ham, so that one's the next one. I was like a very, very poor student, and just obsessed with like trying to find some way to get money. And at the time, it was like I don't know if people do it anymore, but there was like job ads on Gumtree. And it was this one ad, and it was just like, looking for people to support at match days, support us in the box. And I was just like, wicked. Yeah, I know a bit about football. I'll go have the interview. And I had this interview with this guy in his box at the stadium. And he was just like, oh, I can tell you know a lot about art. You know a lot about fashion. If you were to get the job, we'd dress you in like head to toe Jimmy Choo. I was like, sick. Sounds amazing. And then he was like, to progress into the next step of this interview, you have to come to a...
Your device lost its connection.
Sorry, that's my coffee machine that talks to me. He's like, to progress in the next step in this interview, you actually have to come for a second part interview at my house. And I was like, yeah? Have to come for a second part interview at your house? But he had his own box, like, beautifully kitted out. Like, he was clearly spending a lot of money at this place. And my boyfriend at the time, I was just like, look, listen, I've got a second interview. All I need to do is go to his house and have the second part of the interview. And he was like, obviously, you're not doing that. You're not going to this interview. He's like, why don't you text him and just say, yeah, we're interested, but my boyfriend's going to come with me. So I text him, obviously never heard anything back. And I just sort of reflected on it like a few months later. And I was like, this is just another example of how, I don't know, not to blame the club, because obviously maybe they had no idea that that was happening. But this stuff is allowed to happen in football. And I was like, that was gross. Like, that was like, that could have gone really wrong, you know, if I'd actually ended up going to this guy's house to have this second part of the interview. I just felt really unsafe, and I was like, okay, that's another time that I don't feel super, super connected. I don't feel like this is like a really safe space for me.
Very likely did go wrong for
I'm sure
God knows how many. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, especially if you're looking at like students who probably do need the money and are going to be excited about being dressed head to toe in Jimmy Choo like I was. Luckily, I just had someone like who was a bit, you know, had a bit more of an idea of what these things were. But yeah, and I just remember thinking, yeah, that's another, that's that was my value in football, was that. And then, I think like lots of just different moments where I was just like, yeah, I've got nothing to give this. I'm not fully even respected in this space. It is violent. It doesn't feel like it's somewhere that me and my friends can operate in. And I think just over years, just sort of turned my back on it a little bit and probably got a little bit resentful as well. Because I was a bit pissed off, because I was like, this was something that I used to love and still probably, and to a point still did, because I did still go to games, but just wasn't able to be there. So I was probably pretty angry and miserable as well, to be fair.
Where do you think the line is from it being acceptable for, like in your case, your dad to take his young girls there, and that's not really a problem? Where is the line between that and it being unacceptable for you to be there?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think there is something to be said for like the protection of a male figure. I remember even like when we were doing our photography project, and we like, that's when the first year that we started TFG and we took photos of like different friends from all over the country, we'd often go up to people and it would be like a woman with her dad or brother or whatever. And we'd go up to her, ask her directly, do you mind if we take a photo of you? And her like dad or brother would be like, no, she's too busy. It's almost like and that was in 2016. That wasn't even that long ago. It was almost like it felt like us, like the person that we needed to be talking to was the man in that space. Because as you said, it felt like at the time, maybe it's people felt like that was theirs. Let me go back to your question about the line, because I think it's a really important one. I think it is, there's an element of being like, yeah, as I said, protected by a male figure. I think it's also, there's a bit of a, oh, okay, well, we'll accept that she's here, but she's not going to make too much noise, especially if she's with her dad or a brother. She's just like, as part of the family. But if you're there as an independent person and you're making noise with your friends, there's been so many times where I've been like told to shut up or sit down or, you don't have that direct person to like lean on, I guess.
Yeah, I guess it can, you can subconsciously come to rely on that as a kid, right? And then until you're the,
sure,
you venture into the environment on your own and you see it for what it is slash was.
Yeah, definitely. And there is a sexualization element as well, because like you're not going to get comments from men, or you'd be very unlucky to get comments from men when you're with your dad or your brother or anything. But if you are by yourself, like that just makes it so much more easy to do. You're not going to have some guy, you know, come up to you if you're with your dad versus being with your friend. It happens all the time.
Where does the tipping point come from you falling out of the game to then reaching 2016 where you're having this, okay, you know what, something needs to be done, or not necessarily I'm gonna do something about it, but let's look at this in another way, or let's begin this project. Where do you get to that point? What's the entry point back into going, I guess, and then wanting to change something?
I think my entry point back into going came like 2 years before 2016. And it was like, I was in London at the time. And I think as much as I loved living in London, it was great. And it was such an exciting city. I'd always felt like a little bit disconnected from it. I was like away from home. I didn't feel like I had much of a community there. I was sort of like living, you know, in a block where I didn't really know my neighbours. Like, everything felt like super transient. And I think I had like a really deep like need and want to like feel connected to my home. And going back to football games, going back to Leicester City, it was a massive part of that. And it felt like that was always one of the things that I've loved about football the most anyway. I've said before, like, I'm not even sure if I was ever a football fan. I was just a Leicester City fan. I didn't care what everything else, anyone else was doing in the Premier League. Like, all I cared about was, like, going to the games, the games that I had the tickets to. So I think I felt, like, a real need to be close to home, and went to a few more games in the 2014 season when, like, Leicester were, like, coming back into the Premier League with my dad. I just felt like, started to feel like I had a little bit more space in my heart for football again. And then it was the year that, like, Leicester almost got relegated. I went travelling at the end of that year, went to Colombia for, like, 3 months, and was talking to, like, one of the guys that I was living in a house with, and he was, like, a massive Chelsea fan. And I was telling him, I'm a Leicester fan, and we had, like, 10 games to, like, basically save ourselves. And he was like, let's go and watch a few games then. So me and him used to go and watch, like, as many games as we could when we were in Colombia. And I just remember, I don't know, maybe it was just being over there, and I was just seeing it through a completely different, like, fan experience. And then Leicester did manage to stay up. And then 2016 was obviously a massive season for Leicester fans for all the reasons that everyone knows. And that was really when it just took over my life. Couldn't get enough of it. Like, literally couldn't consume enough about Leicester. Was just reading everything, talking to everyone about it at all times. It was the only thing my family could talk about. And it kind of coincided with the time I was working at an agency at the time as a project manager, which was a great gig, and it was a great agency and made some amazing friends there. But, like, I think I was always a bit more of a creative who hadn't, like, landed on graphic design. Do you know what I mean? Like, creatively minded, but I just hadn't mastered my specific art. Like, I wasn't a painter or, you know, fashion designer or anything like that. But I always felt like a real gnawing need to do something creative and do something creative myself. So, like, my art director friend at the time, I love this so much, but she was, like, super creative, and she lent me her camera. She's got this beautiful, like, really, like, top of the range Canon, because I was like, oh, I really want to go and take photos of Leicester fans and, like, capture the memory for myself. So she lent me her, like, gorgeous camera with, like, most beautiful lenses. Took photos in, like, March, just before obviously they won the title, and just loved being back in the stands and, like, capturing all this movement, capturing all this excitement. It was a game against West Ham, actually, that I went back. I don't know if you remember.
I know the one, 2-2, yeah.
But that was the game that I went down and took photos at. And I was just like, you know when you've just, like, realised you've just done something that you absolutely love? Being around people that, like, sounded like the people that I grew up around, just feeling, like, close to home, and then also capturing a moment that was just so special. And at that point, I was just like, oh, I need to continue doing this. I need to do this in some other way. So I think I went a few other times throughout that season, just towards the end. And then me and my friend Laura, who set up TFG, she's not involved now just because she had a full-time job and it was getting a lot. But she was saying, she was like, well, we need to continue this project. But it was the 2016 Euros. And there was just so much crap in the press, like sexiest female fans. That was the only, like, visualization of football fans. She's like, we need to do what you've done in your project, but for female fans. And it was just, like, one of those moments where I was like, ding, that's it. And yeah, basically started on that project, went all around the UK in one season and went to every single club in the Premier League, stood outside in the cold, got, like, told off by loads of people that were on their land, met, like, some amazing people, traveled so much, but at the end of the year just got, like, this wicked archive of images. And I've got a few of them on my wall, actually. I'm literally looking at them now. They weren't technically the best images at all. We learned loads, like, sort of at the start of the season they were pretty crap. Towards the end we were, like, sort of, like, capturing our style, I guess, and just sort of getting a little bit closer to, you know, some good portraits. But it was just, for me, I think it was, like, I learned a lot that year as well. It was, like, I felt so, I guess, alone as being a female fan and feeling, like, so displaced and, like, where do I fit into all of this? This is a huge part of me, but I don't see myself here. So, like, being at the end of the season, every single club, even the smaller ones. So it's not like the top six, it's not just the top six. It's just not just the Arsenals and the Man Cities and the Chelseas. Every club all the way down to Hull and Sunderland have got this amazing, like, female fan audience. We are here, but we've just not necessarily had the spotlight on us in the right way.
The just touching back on the technically sound element of the images you were taking, you would have often had only like a minute with some of these people, so you get what you get, right? Seconds. Yeah, you get what you get. So it's less about that, and I think it's a good lesson in there that creativity doesn't necessarily need to manifest itself in perfect or kind of all pleasing work. It's just the act of doing it is the creative act, but the finished product is not necessarily a creative endeavor. It's more like, because what you've embarked on like a dual journey there, you've found a creative outlet that satisfies you from your friend trusting you incredibly with her great camera, by the way.
I know. Shouts to her.
She's a keeper. But you've found your creative outlet and it's aligned perfectly with an interest you've got. So, okay, this is where I fit. But there's a dual kind of story running alongside that, which is activism, right?
Yeah.
At the end of the day. So the end result is not necessarily about the quality of the image or a style or whatever. It's more about the message that you're getting out.
Yeah. And it was more about, I think, actually statement. I think the most important thing was, because I think we got into, it was maybe like December and we were like, we've done 10 clubs. We've got another 10 to do in like however many weeks. And we were like, this is a bloody mountain to climb. We weren't getting, we had no brand sponsor or anything. We were like paying for all these tickets. And as we all know, tickets to bloody anywhere in the UK aren't cheap. On like the salaries we were on at the time, it was hard. And we missed loads of stuff throughout that year because we were constantly at some weird football ground in like Stoke or something. It did get to a point where we were like, oh, can we even do this? Like, do we just stop at 10? But I think the impact of the project and the statement of the project for me always had to be, no, we get every single one, because that's the point. We're trying to show that it's not just like Leicester fans, because obviously I'm going to be able to take photos of Leicester fans. That's the club that I love, and that's a club that I'm probably going to be able to ring up my mum's mate and get a photo of her. We needed to show it across the UK. So that was the statement, I guess, that it is, these female fans are everywhere.
Did you feel like a sense of responsibility growing as you were moving through this? It changed form as you were going through the clubs, right? It's an idea that's then evolving into something else that you don't quite have control of.
It changed form really fast as well, because when we started, it was literally like, I think we launched our like Instagram maybe like after we'd done two clubs, but really quickly. And I think this is the other thing with like TFG. I think this is the other thing to always talk about. It timing wise, it totally, totally intersected with a cultural shift, which was the post Me Too movement. Before that, it just wasn't, I don't think we would have ever got the cut through that we did if it didn't happen in 2016. If it happened a couple of years earlier, I just don't think, some people would have found it interesting, but as a thing that got the press that we did, I just don't think it would have happened. So I think the football community followed it quite quickly, and I think the fact that we were every single week we were posting new images, we've been to Crystal Palace, Bournemouth, you could follow along and you could sort of like track the flow of the project as well. So it did change really quickly. And I think what happened, which I don't know why we didn't think about this, because it seems really logical that this is what would have happened. But we just had so many people being like, this looks like me. This looks like me and my mum. This looks like me and my sisters. And why don't you come here? Like there was so many people who wanted to like reach out to us and chat to us and, like go to games, which was amazing. But that was the reason that it kept on going, was that continuous feedback loop, which was made easy because of Instagram and made easy because of social media. It's funny because we talk about like social media and it being a, such a negative thing. But for me, I never able to say that in the same way, because I know that this fangirl wouldn't have been able to happen without Instagram. We'd be able to make so many connections and maybe to build our community through that. So it really like democratized that whole process of connecting with fans in the way we just wouldn't have been able to do 10 years earlier. I always thought it was just going to be a year-long project. I thought, like, okay, the most amazing thing would be having exhibitions, which what we had, and, like, who knows, like, print a coffee table book. But at the end of the year, I was like, we've not even, like, scratched the surface. We've not even begun. So we sort of, yeah, that's the reason it kept on going past the first year.
Alongside that, how much is it, like, alongside the momentum building, how much of it having to continue is also how much of it is now in you?
100%. No, but that, like, those last 2 years of football just, like, broke my brain, because Leicester winning the title, like, genuinely changed me as a person for the better. But I was just like, that just changed the way I think about everything. And then having off the back of that, then doing a project that I was personally, like, really proud of and felt like we'd really achieved something. I was like, I've had 2 years of, like, positive reinforcement. I can't stop now. I literally wasn't going to be able to do it. So it had to continue, because I just had so much more, like, I had so much more gas in the tank.
Did this surprise you about yourself, or can you draw parallels from anything you did as a kid?
I think if you'd said, if I left school and you'd said, right, you're 35 and you've spent the last 7 years, 8 years of your life documenting female fan culture, I think I would have been like, you've got the wrong person. Like, that, I don't think that would have connected my mind and been like, yeah, that sounds like me. But I think since I'm little, I've always kind of had an idea, like, I've been able to sort of have an idea of what I want to do quite a few years before I want to do it. So I remember, like, you know, when you leave school and you're in year 11, did you ever have a yearbook and, you know, you write, like, your closing comments to your friends and things like that? And I remember, like, I must have been, like, 15 when I left school, and in my yearbook, it was like, right, what are you doing next? And I remember, like, writing, I'm going to college and I'm doing business, I'm doing French, and I'm doing textiles. Then I'm going to move to London, and then I'm going to go to Manchester and I'm going to study this. I'd already, like, decided what degree I was going to do at the age of 15. And I did all those things, which is nuts. So I think I've always been quite good at, like, I don't know if manifesting is the right word, but having an idea of, loosely, of what I want to achieve before I've done it, and not being, like, wedded to it to a point of being like, okay, it has to look exactly like this, but having, like, a bit of a, I don't know, maybe like an innate plan or like an innate feeling of what it is that I'm going to do. So I think almost from basically, maybe, like, fast forward, like, 2 years to when I was saying I wanted to go home and I wanted to connect, I was like, I need to do something that connects me with home. And then 2 years later, the opportunity kind of presented itself to, like, make it happen. And I remember, like, being on holiday with my friend and being like, I need to do something outside of my job, it's driving me crazy. I'm, like, up to my ears in Excel spreadsheets, I want to do something creative. And then, yeah, that sort of, that becoming a thing a few years later. I didn't know it was going to be a football project. I thought I was going to be, like, making jewelry or something. But I really did. I thought that was going to be what I was going to do. But I think I've always, like, been like, if I want to do something, I've always kind of semi got the idea in mind of what it is before I've done it. And then you just got to be, like, loose with working out, like, exactly what it is and not being too prescriptive, but having an idea of, like, the baseline of what it is you want to do.
Yeah, I guess it helps you at least ignore what is not in your peripherals, so to speak, right? If you've got that rough idea, it's like, okay, well, that's not in my plan, so I can just not let that distract me. I'm going that way.
Totally.
Otherwise you can end up just snaking around. I wasn't laughing at the idea of you being a jewelry designer, by the way. What struck me is that it's quite a solo pursuit, and,
for sure.
And you were lacking or feeling a lack of community.
And, yeah, exactly. That was never going to be it.
So what you've done, though, what you've done is, like, you lacking community, you felt the pull of home, you've gone home, and off the back of it, you formed a community that exceeds the literal limits of a football stadium and taking it taking it nationwide, and you've given other people access to a community that they weren't feeling themselves.
Yeah.
Is that something that you reflect on?
No, not really, I'm going to be honest. I think because things happen so quickly, right? And you're always, especially when, like, you know, TFG right now is, and has been for the last year, like my actual full-time job. It wasn't always the way. I suppose you're always like being like, right, how do I keep the lights on, you know?
Sorry, your device lost its connection.
It's my coffee machine. I'm keeping those in.
They're very entertaining.
It is great, but we've not managed to work out how to get it to like actually do anything but like tell us that it's not connected.
Dying of thirst over there.
Literally. do I reflect on it? No, I feel like sometimes I don't have time. Sometimes I do. I think what you just said actually is genuinely like the thing that I feel proudest about is the fact that it has given these opportunities to other people, like given them a space to, like, you know, be a football fan and I guess just gain a bit of voice. Like that's, I've seen that so many times with TFG, and I see the effects of what that has given people. And that is definitely like, not, as I said, when I started, didn't know where this project was going to go, but that is without a doubt, like the highlight. That is something I'm always going to be really, really proud of. And always a, like a beautiful piece of what this fangirl has created. But no, I feel like I probably do need to reflect a bit more actually. No, just said it.
Yeah, maybe the odd treat. Pat on the back is like wouldn't go amiss, you know?
Yeah,
it's a beautiful thing.
Like you. Well, that's the thing. It's hard to do that sometimes, I think.
Yeah, I guess because you, well, like you've just touched on, you're always looking at what the next thing is, right? And how it can continue. Yeah. Or you're worried about, again, like you said, keeping the lights on. So you haven't got time to pat yourself on the back. It moves from a photo project that's, I guess, just shining a light on female fans in the game. What that was then and what it is now are two very different things. How did that happen, and how did you navigate that yourself on a personal level?
It's happened over years as well. So it's like nothing with TFG sort of happened overnight, which has always been helpful. Photography project to it becoming like something that I guess brands wanted to get a bit more involved with was a little bit hard. I did find that a bit hard because when you do like a hobby, right? No, like, especially when we started, I was like, I don't care what people say about these images. Like, we've got 50 followers. That doesn't bother me at all. To actually having a bigger audience, and people want more from you when you are a bigger audience. That's always challenging because it did just start as such a hobby and something so, like, you know, done sometimes lying down in bed, right? It's a funny one, I think. But I think as transitioning to a community and to a slightly bigger platform, that came quite naturally because it was more an end thing. It was like a need, and I think that's always something that this fangirl has done quite innately, has followed that like need path. So like for me, it was like I need to see myself here more because I can't work out like my relationship with football, my love for it, versus people telling me I'm not a real fan when my team have just won the league. It's too confusing. I need to see a visual here. So that was the first need. And then the second one was like, okay, we've done that. We can't keep on going around the country taking photos every single year. But what is needed now is like a space for us to be able to continue our love for the game and like get us back into it. Because my story is not unique in the fact that like women often do fall out of football at the age of 16 when they start college or work or whatever. We need to have a space that feels like we can get back into it and we can watch with our mates, and it's not like, you know, we don't get remarks from people when we walk into a pub and watch a game. And that was so much a massive part of what this fangirl was for a few years, was all geared around our meetups. We did like so many, I've even lost count, probably over 100 in London, and then other people took them over for us. We had some in New York, some in Manchester, a couple in LA, of basically just girls coming together. Literally, it couldn't have been more simple. Girls coming together in a pub, watch the football. The mere fact that there's more than three of you provides you this element of protection and provides you this sort of confidence to be able to be in that space and not have to worry about, you know, everything else. That was just a very big need of what I needed, but also what Harry, she started sort of that year as well, what she needed. And then we were able to really like build that out. And then I suppose what comes with having like 35 women in a pub wearing football shirts is that brands are like, oh, that's going to be interesting for my campaign. I'm going to be able to put some, push a message through that. And that's what sort of like, I guess, opened up the doors to us working with brands a little bit more. And then, yeah, we sort of, most of our business up until that point has come from like brand partnerships. And now we've kind of transitioned into an agency, which is really exciting and a really cool space to be, and allows us to do a little bit more work with brands and organizations and be a bit more behind the scenes as well. Because as much as I like, I do love doing podcasts, but there's an element where it's like, I don't want it to be my face all the time. There's so much more work that this fangirl as a, past the community, but as an organization can do. So much knowledge that we hold as being fans in the space that we can connect with brands and organizations to help them do the same.
So yeah, you raise a really good point there. I guess at what point, just to go back slightly, because you've literally just said you don't want to just be because you've literally just said you don't want it to be your face at the front of it all the time. But I'd just like to stick on that just for a second. Was there a point where you realized this is not, in inverted commas, mine anymore? This is a bigger thing. This is for people now. And
100%.
Was there a process of having to let go of it a little bit and realizing that it is no longer just to fulfill what you want to see, but it's now like there's a much more substantial role that you're fulfilling now? So you've got to let go of the idea of what this fangirl was and embrace what it is.
I mean, think about that. Like, I put my face to TFG so much for it to have a context more than anything, because it's almost like, I feel like people need to understand that it wasn't just sort of a soulless entity behind the brand, but it was never really about me. My mum always laughs at me because whenever I talk about this fangirl, I'll always say, even from like when I started in like 2016, I'll always say we. And she's just like, I love how you use the royal we. And I'm like, no, it's never been like I. It's never been like Amy's fangirl. It almost just doesn't sit well with me. It's not. There's been so many people that have contributed to this fangirl, not necessarily like doing the day-to-day business, but like been a part of it, like supported our message, you know, come to our meetups, been like a part of this community. And that is the like lovely thing with community, I think, and such a big part of who we are. It's never just been about me, ever. I'd hate it if it was.
What were the learnings when brands start knocking on the door? And was that a massive removal from your work background, and you're then having these conversations that you're not kind of used to? And
it wasn't a huge removal. I feel like because I'd worked in agencies before, in that project management producer space, like it wasn't, I didn't feel like I was in somewhere completely different, which was helpful. I think it definitely helped me navigate these spaces because I've had so much experience, good and bad, with brands, that I do always think about like young creators. I'm like, oh gosh, I feel like sometimes you can get absolutely like rolled over and people can just take the piss and just take so much from you. We've had some amazing opportunities and some really, really cool projects that we've done. But it is hard, especially when, like, I don't know, I feel like sometimes there's been a few occasions where I'm like, you are very much taking advantage of the fact that we are a really small little platform and business. What you are about to gain from this is so much more than we do. You know, we're going to get 200 quid from this like campaign, and you're going to be able to win an award off the back of it. That did happen once, and that was very, very jarring. And no mention of this fangirl in it. That's always been difficult. And I think it's still something I navigate like daily. Like, you know, people, you know, getting emails that are like, hi, we'd really like you to do this. And I'm like, okay, well, that sounds interesting. The campaign sounds good. Just quickly aligning. Do you have budget to cover, you know, our time? Fortunately, on this occasion, there is no, I'm like, it happens too regularly. And it's not for a case of being like, oh, we just want, you know, the big bucks for it. It's never been that, but it's just like, there has to be some sort of exchange, because there's been, I can't even count them. There's been so many times when that's just not existed. And it does, I don't know, I do sometimes think, would you be approaching us like this if we were a men's football collective? And I do sometimes wonder if that has got something to do with it.
Would it be men typically that you were dealing with in these interactions?
Can be both, you know. Really can be. It's not necessarily, I think a lot of the time it's also not personal. I don't think it's necessarily like an independent man. It's coming from the company level.
Yeah.
And they've signed up for projects and they've got X amount of budget, but they want you to distribute. And they've not considered that in their cost. So they are trying to get something free, which I understand. I do understand it. But I think it gets my back up sometimes when it's like put to me as like I'm getting a really great opportunity. And I'm like,
yeah, we're doing you a favour. I mean, you're doing this with or without them. And you have been, right?
Yeah, so.
So the formation of the studio then, we get to that point.
Yeah.
To the point where you're like, this is your job. Mm-hmm. Like an idea that you had in your head.
That is mad. That's insane. I feel like that's an example of like when I was saying like I've had an idea in my brain. Like I think definitely not from when we started, but when I think from the first campaign we ever did, which was with Adidas, I was just like, look, if we can do one, we can do more. There is a way to do this. I'm not sort of thinking, okay, you know, every single summer's going to look like this, or we're going to get all this work. But there's, if we've done it once, we must be able to do it again. We must be able to do more of this. So then that was in like 2017, and built up some like good cred since then. But I think it's always been in the back of mind that this is something that I've wanted to do and like have this space, because I think I always think there's just so many agencies out there. There are tons. There's loads of studios. Some are like absolutely incredible, but I know that like me personally and some of the people that we work with on our like Rolodex of creators are just unbelievable, so cool, and exactly what these brands want, which is female creators who know football. Like I think we've got a really good offering, which is cool, and we really give a shit about football. We really give a shit about growing this. Like we want to use this to create opportunities for people, and we want to use this to like help power football in Leicester as well, which has been the last 3 years of what I've been doing a bit more, which is my own football team, which is just ace.
Are you naturally a confident person? Like you're saying, one, if we get one job, we get one campaign rather, we get another one. And as you've just mentioned, there are tons and tons of agencies out there. So throwing another one into the mix is, you know, almost like an echo chamber, shouting in an echo chamber in some ways.
Yeah, yeah.
But you're convinced, you know, there's that underlying belief that you can make it work, and you are making it. Well, you know, the proof is there that you're making it work. So yeah, is that like is that confidence a default state for you, or is this something that's the result of 7-8 years of TFG?
That's such a good question. I don't think it's, I think when I say like I think we can make it work, I'm very well aware that like I could be talking to you in 18 months and be like, yo, you know what, TFG Studios didn't work. Like I'm definitely not like closed or like completely blinkered on the view of this is going to be it. But I also think, like, I don't know, like, what's the worst that happens? Like, I think I do have a bit of a default position of like, what is the possible worst thing that could happen? Which can be highly problematic and highly dangerous in certain situations. I think this is what I was sort of getting back to as well, when I sort of said that, like, what happened with Leicester City, like, fundamentally changed my brain. I'm just like, how, like, what, like, I find it quite hard to believe anyone is telling me anything since that year, because I'm like, how could you possibly tell me I'm not going to be able to start a studio, when you also told me, like, Elvis, it's more likely for Elvis to be alive than for, like, Leicester to win the league. Like, that just broke my brain. I was like, I'm never going to be able to believe a single thing anyone tells me ever again. And I think that sort of, like, wormed its way into the back of my mind. I'm just like, well, like, of course, like, there has to be a possibility.
That's quite a beautiful thing for your hometown club to impart on you, right? Because
definitely
things that should not happen do happen.
Exactly. And I think it's what annoyed me was just the confidence. This is, we're talking about confidence. What annoyed me with that season was, like, the confidence of people being like, this is never going to happen. And I'm like, hold on, but how can you back yourself that much? And then it did, and I'm not allowed to back myself.
We lost at home to Leicester 2-1 at the start of the season. And I remember being at that game, leaving it, and saying to my brother and my mate, or one of us said it, I can't remember who, but someone said it, like, how have we lost to them? Because it was a really disappointing season, the last season, right? It was the same team pretty much as well, but for one or two additions maybe. Went from thinking, how have we lost to these guys, to that game in the April at your ground, thinking, I'll actually take a draw there. That's not a bad result. But also thinking... And this is, I bet I wasn't the only one through that season, but maybe one of the few that would say it out loud, thinking, I actually wouldn't mind taking a hit in this game if it gets them that much closer to winning this league.
The points that we actually, like, won the league on was, like, the lowest ever. Like, I know everyone knows that. And no one was ready for it. That was also the other beautiful thing, as you say, like, not the club weren't ready for it, the fans weren't ready for it. It came as, like, such a bolt out of the blue. It changed. It did really genuinely change how I see everything. And I know that's like, it sounds a little bit like woo-woo, but I think because I was just so in football at that time. And I think it's also like, I don't know, I think a lot of like smaller clubs and like smaller cities can probably identify. It's like, if you're like, oh, we're playing this shit team, Leicester, there's such a... You get so used to being like told, oh, you're not going to do anything. You're shit. You come from a shit place. And then to do that, it's just, it fundamentally changed. But it was just a proof point. I was just like, if, I'm not saying that Leicester are going to win the league again, because I personally don't think that is going to happen. But it just set in mind, I was just like, yeah, it really gave me like a...
It gives you a what if for everything, right? Sticking with the thread that changed the way you look at things, going on a slightly less jovial route, I guess, now, does your experience at games as you went into adulthood, do you think those experiences changed the way you look at men? Do you view them with like a maybe like an air of disappointment, or more the hate, yeah, or more a case of like that they, because I am one, I've just somehow put a distance between myself there, nothing to do with me, or that we can just be unfortunately products of our environment rather than it being a naturally kind of malevolent force that we're putting out?
I think for definitely the first few years of starting TFG, it was almost like, again, it kind of like coincided with this like feminist awakening in me, and probably quite a deep anger towards most men, if not all men. But that is definitely, that's just not something I feel anymore, because I think it was like a reframing in my brain. It's like, I've got so many good examples of men who totally like ride for TFG, are incredible friends to me, incredible supporters. So again, it can't, there's no possible way it's all men. I think it's, what's helpful is for me to be like, it's not men, it's the system of patriarchy, and women uphold that. I know many, I've met many women in life who are upholders of that in the same way, if not worse ways than men. And that has given me a ton of peace. Like, thinking that, it's made it really a lot easier, genuinely, to not get angry and not get annoyed at every single thing. Because I think there was a time in my life where I did. Even like, if like, I do, sometimes I speak with BBC Leicester and they got me on to talk about Joey Barton. And I think they really wanted me to be like angry about it. And I was like, I'm not really, because maybe because I kind of expect it, but also because I don't know, what else do you expect from him? He's a little loser. So I don't know, I'm not going to get upset by what he says. But also, yeah, I think it's easier to deal with when it's just like, patriarchy is the problem, not men. And that's been very, very, very helpful.
What does it look like for TFG Studios now? What's the day to day? What is the future looking like for it? It's a big time in its journey.
Yeah, definitely. But I think it's still like, I'll show you around the office.
Oh yeah, go on then.
This isn't going to be useful for anyone that's listening to the podcast. So we've got a little office which is in De Montfort University Centre, which is in the Innovation Centre. It is teeny. It reminds me a lot of like David Brent's office in The Office.
Yeah.
But I literally love it. It's such a cute little space, and it's like ours, and it's like where we can work. And yeah, I guess for me, I'm really excited that this is the start. I was saying to someone, I was just like, you know, fingers crossed with some good luck and some good clients, we might be in a bigger space in a few years. That would be the absolute dream for what we do. But right now we're in a small little space, and we're just trying to work away sort of project by project and let people know that we're here and they can come to us and we can support. It's very much like we're going to have to take it step by step, and just sort of build up business, build up relationships, and I guess just stay true to what it is that we want to do, which is connect women to football, and along the way give women paid opportunities to be in the space that I'm so lucky to be in, open that door as well. So that's the ambition. It's not going to be a overnight thing, you know, probably don't see us, I don't know, being able to enter into DNAD awards or whatever they're called anytime soon, but it's the start.
Hey, but why not? Why not? Why eventually not, hey? Right, Leicester won the league.
Yeah, exactly.
So alignment is something that's been coming up a lot for me lately. And I'm wondering if, like, despite the fact that, you know, you obviously got like a lot of hard work ahead of you, and it's by no means laid out on a plate for you,
mm-mm,
despite the hustle that is needed for you to succeed over there, do you feel that sense of alignment that you're on the right path?
1,000%. I think that's what, like, I do feel really very, very lucky to have like be doing something that is my purpose. That is, I think, genuinely it is why I feel like inner quite peaceful, because I know that like what we are able to do at TFG is work that I've been wanting to do for a long time. It's a continuation of that, and then with the football club as well, like providing space for women to play, both of those things are like absolutely like core to what I want to do and what I've been wanting to do for a really long time. But yeah, you are right, exactly. It's not laid out. We don't know what the next couple of weeks are going to hold, but I think it's just about, you know, building relationships and continuing with the clients that we do have, continuing to do like more than they're expecting. And if we can hopefully do those two things, we're in a good position.
Yeah. And well, your impact outside of that anyway, has had an irreversible impact, hasn't it, on women around the country and the game. So outside of just securing the future of the studio, you've left a legacy behind. Like you said earlier on, we don't know whether it's going to be successful or not. 18 months down the line, you'll be able to tell more, but it does go beyond that.
It does, yeah. I do think as well that it has coincided with like a total like time for women's football. Like the fact that like you've got, you know, the England squad now just going from total heights. We have been very, very lucky with our timing for like getting us off the ground with Me Too. And then the fact that like the country just took to women's football in a way that hasn't been done before. We've coincided with some really, really great points.
Yeah, you can say that's fortunate in some ways, but you know, you started doing something and most people don't, right? So
yeah,
you can say it's luck, but you put yourself out there to begin a project. You were dragging yourself around the country for a year. So you made that luck.
Yeah,
in many ways.
That's true. Yeah. I think, yeah, that's a good point. You've got to do, I suppose, the work up front.
I'm conscious of the time in that you've got a day to get on with, and I unusually have got a second conversation coming up today. But is there anything you would like to mention or share that I've not touched on or that we've not touched on before we go?
No, I don't think so. I think that was really interesting. I think that was really interesting. Yeah, you've got me thinking about things that I probably haven't really spoken about with TFG.
Well, it's been great for me because, like I said, I've been following, I mentioned this to Amy in our earlier chats, the other Amy, just for when people are listening. This will confuse people.
Double Amy's.
Yeah. That I'd been following you since, well, TFG, since I launched MPLH in 2018, well, in the mag form. So it's great for me to learn more about that journey, but also take a bit of inspiration from that in this kind of new pathway I've set out on this end, really, in trying to finally grow what I'm doing here and seeing where that leads.
I can fully see it. I can really see it. Something about like the, especially the production of the podcasts and the visuals, and it's like you've got, yeah, I don't not believe that it can be something great.
I'll take that. That'll be a soundbite that I'll replay over and over again.
I don't not believe. Yeah, apologies. That was a little clunky.
I know what you meant. I know what you meant. Amy, thanks so much for that. Really appreciate it. Oh, one more question. And I hope this isn't rude, but how do you pronounce your surname?
Druker.
Druker.
Druker rhymes with snooker, if that helps.
It definitely does. Right, I'll let you crack on. Do you want to hear this before it goes out?
No, I think it's fine. I don't think there's been too many clangers.
Just that bit where you said you hated men.
Basically that bit. That has to leave it. That needs to be the hook.
Yeah, that's how we'll get people in. We'll anger all the male followers. Yeah. Brilliant. Nice one, Amy. Thanks so much. I'll let you crack on.
Bye.
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the conversation. Don't forget to hit the follow button and I'll see you next time.